Welcome to Bladder Buzz, Beyond the Bladder, the podcast where doctors, researchers, and consumers discuss bladder health and function for those with neurogenic bladder. On today's episode, we welcome Dr. Mandy Rounds and Morgan Kane, a pediatric occupational therapist, as they explore the transformative role of occupational therapy in helping children manage neurogenic bladder. And now, Beyond the Bladder.
Hello, welcome back to Bladder Buzz. I'm your host, Dr. Mandy Rounds, a research scientist at MedStar National Rehabilitation Hospital and MedStar Health Research Institute. In my work, I have the privilege of collaborating with individuals who have faced challenging conditions such as spinal cord injury, multiple sclerosis, stroke, and spina bifida. These neurologic injuries and diseases not only affect one's mobility and daily lives, but can also have an impact on their bladder function. Joining me today is Morgan Kane, a pediatric occupational therapist at Monroe Carroll Jr. Children's Hospital at Vanderbilt. Morgan previously worked as a program coordinator at Boston Children's Spina Bifida Clinic before moving to Nashville to work on the Spina Bifida Clinic team as the OT specialist. She also acts as the OT lead in brachial plexus and pediatric hand clinics. Morgan feels passionate about improving independence for children with complex medical conditions, especially with self-catheterization. Throughout this episode, Morgan will share her expertise and insights into the unique challenges faced by children with neurologic conditions and the transformative role that occupational therapists have when it comes to children managing their neurogenic bladder. Thanks for joining me today, Morgan.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So, Morgan, as a pediatric occupational therapist, you have extensive experience working with children with neurogenic bladder. Can you share with our listeners how occupational therapy can help play a role in those with children developing the necessary skills and strategies to manage their toileting routines and bladder care independently?
Yeah, of course. I think that it's important to note for people who may not be familiar that occupational therapists work with clients to help them do what they need to do, what they want to do, and what they're expected to do as independently as possible. So occupational therapists like myself treat patients in a variety of medical settings and with patients that have a variety of medical conditions. It could be patients with developmental disabilities or acquired injuries or any medical illnesses. We really specialize in treating activities of daily living or daily life. And that, of course, includes things like dressing, toileting, even things like a person's medical management skills or how they manage their chronic conditions. So working at Vanderbilt Spina Bifida Clinic, I see a lot of patients with neurogenic bladder. It's a very common diagnosis for kiddos that have developmental disabilities. As a pediatric OT, I focus on optimizing my patient self-management skills or the development of skills and strategies for managing toileting routines, bladder care, and self-catheterization independently. Through that process, I do evaluations that look at cognitive skills, motor skills, sensory functions, as well as psychosocial functioning and environmental factors that can impact bladder management and the ability to self-catheterize. Occupational therapists place a really high value on not just considering a person's body functions or abilities, but also analyzing the environment around them and how the activity itself can be adapted to better suit the needs of their patients. So we may use standardized assessments or special observations to evaluate the system around the patient, their components of function, and tailor interventions accordingly to make sure that we're meeting the child's needs.
Fantastic. So can you talk a little bit about these interventions that you brought up? Walk me through how these various interventions are incorporated into the training process and their significance in empowering children to successfully perform self-catheterization.
Yeah, I think on a high level, OTs can provide a variety or a range of interventions during self-cath training. It can start with simple things like teaching proper hand hygiene techniques, education, body anatomy education, motor skill strengthening and training development, problem solving skills, like I said, adapting the environment and the toileting space that they might be using, providing anxiety reduction strategies or coping mechanisms. And the big one, I think, is cognitive strategy techniques and applications. So one of the things I do in my practice is I've been trained in something called COOP. COOP stands for Cognitive Orientation to Daily Occupation Performance. It's sort of a mouthful, but really it's a problem-solving approach and a model that looks at patient-identified goals. So for my pediatric patients, it's those kiddos who are really motivated to be independent with self-cath and are aware of catheterization procedures, but don't necessarily know how. Maybe they are mobility dependent and they require use of a wheelchair, so they're worried about toilet transfers. They have limited hip abduction or decreased range of motion in their hips, so they have trouble accessing their urethra. Or they just get confused with the sequence of how you're supposed to cath, because there's many, many steps that are involved from collecting supplies all the way to cleaning yourself up at the end. So what COOP does is it goes through that process and really emphasizes a parent coaching and a child coaching model. So it sort of feels not so intuitive to me as an OT. We try to do a lot in the therapy world to have hands-on patients, and COOP is the opposite of that. It's really more about how to enable kids to problem solve themselves. So I ask a lot of rhetorical questions in that process. If a kiddo asks me, you know, what do I do next? I say, well, I don't know. What do you think? And if they're really stuck, maybe I give them closed options, or I say, do you think we do this? Or do you think we do this next? To try and help them consider and process in their brain, okay, I've got to make some decisions here about this. Of course, we're there for safety purposes. We want to make sure that we're avoiding UTIs at all costs. So in that process, we're making sure that they're educated on their body, especially for girls, you know, identifying where their urethra is can be really challenging. So we do lots of work on that and just getting comfortable with their own bodies. Many of these kids with developmental disabilities maybe haven't seen their body before, so they're just not too familiar. So we take it as a very step-by-step process. I use the term grading down activities a lot, because self-catheterization itself is a huge, big, long routine. And what I try to do is take each piece at a time. Part of the COOP model uses something called the goal, plan, do, check. It's a system that we use in order to help teach those kids how to get better with a goal they identify. For the kids that I see, a lot of times it's self-catheterization. So we note that goal, and kind of the parameters around that goal can be kid dependent. So maybe it's, I want a self-cath at home, or maybe it's, I want a self-cath at school, or I want a self-cath when I'm at the mall with my friends. So it can be specified to that kiddo themselves. And we go through and list out every single step of their cath routine. Everyone has the same sort of sequence, but maybe it's a little different depending on who they're seeing based on what their urologist prescribed. So sometimes for younger kids, kids as young as 5, we'll make a picture list, and then we'll turn it into a book, we'll turn it into flashcards, we'll laminate it. Or for older kids, we'll write out the steps. That's sort of what we call creating their plan. Then we do the plan. And I encourage the kids to go exactly based off the plan we created, because at the end, we do a check. And after we're done, we say, okay, where did we get stuck? Was that successful? Was that not successful? What do we need to change? So it's really an iterative process where we're collaborating together, and I'm encouraging them to identify the parts where they struggled versus me saying, oh, wait, don't do that. Or, oh, let's do it this way. It's more about them figuring it out themselves and me being there to guide them.
That's fantastic. I mean, you really played it out really nicely for our listeners, how this COOP plan is integrated into their everyday lives and how it plays a significant role in helping them become more independent with their bladder management. So could you elaborate a little bit more how you get parents and caregivers involved in this process?
Yeah, absolutely. It's so important. And I think education for parents and caregivers is really a crucial part of being an OT in general. You know, we see kiddos in the outpatient setting maybe once a week, sometimes once a month. If kids are, you know, traveling to Nashville from far away, they come from 3 hours. I'm not going to expect them to drive to see me multiple times a week or once a week even. So what I rely heavily on the parents that we work with to make sure they feel comfortable with the education I'm giving them, I always want parents in my sessions so they can see and try to imitate the co-op model and the things that I'm doing. Co-op itself really focuses, like I said, on parent coaching. So parents love their children and they love them so much they want to help at all points in time. It's the same for therapists. They want to have their hands on the patient to guide them and tell them exactly what to do. So a huge part of co-op really talks about how you teach parents how to coach their kids because, you know, they want to be there and it's hard to see your kids struggle. And sometimes these sessions when we're doing self-calf, they can take up to an hour where we're sitting in the bathroom and we're just going through it. I'm not in a rush. You know, that's what OT is there for. It's a lot harder when you're at home and you've got to get to sports or you've got to get to school. So I encourage parents to pick a time of the day where they don't have to be somewhere to practice this to make them more successful. It's unrealistic to think you're going to practice self-calf at 7 a.m. before you head out to work, right? That can be later when they get real good at it. But I want to set them up for success and set expectations around how you can make this work for your family and your routine at home. A lot of times I'll have to tell parents the hardest part about this process is you not instructing them instead of coaching them. So a good practice is sit on your hands and let's maybe put a mask over your face like we used to during COVID, because it's one of the only ways that they have like a barrier to stop themselves from immediately giving input because they want to help and they want their kids to be successful. The learning really comes from the struggle of problem solving in my experience. And our parents are so loving and are tried so hard to help their kids succeed that it almost can sometimes get in the way of their kids figuring it out on their own. So that is hugely important to that cognitive learning piece and that cognitive processing piece that we want our kids to manage themselves.
And you're totally right. I mean, these parents and caregivers have been such an integral part, probably from day one with their kids' care. And, you know, they're the experts a lot of the time. So they're like, no, this is the way to go about it. But I think that's really important what you bring up of, you know, allowing them to provide more independence for their child as well. And that's hard to teach.
I think it's hard to teach because it's sort of against what parents are meant to do, right? Parents are meant to provide all the love and care and all the support. And it is difficult for them to sit back and, you know, watch their kid really struggle to do something and not just say, well, try it this way, because they know how to do it. And they've been sometimes capping them for many, many years. So they're experts in it. And that's why I like them to be in session. I want them to be there to help with the intricacies. Everyone's cath routine is a little different, you know, and I think there's a lot of value in the caregiver OT relationship to make sure that whatever I'm doing in session, you feel like it's attainable for you to do at home. It doesn't matter if you do it once a week in therapy. It matters if you can go back into your life and do it all the time. So having parents present is just super important to me.
Yeah. And like you said, that relationship is super important because they are a lot of times the expert. They know what works for their kid. They know what works for, you know, their life with their kid. So it's great that you guys consider that in the process as well. So let's shift our focus a little bit to the clinical team involved in managing neurogenic bladder. So I know like our research team, it actually comprises of physical medicine and rehab doctors, urologists, PhDs, and therapists. So could you provide some insight into how this multidisciplinary approach enhances the care and treatment for children with neurogenic bladder?
Absolutely. I think of all the things that I am so lucky to do in my current work, the best thing about my job is being able to work on a multidisciplinary team. I feel super grateful that when I started working with kids with spina bifida while I worked at Boston Children's, I really got, honestly, a front row seat to like this premier spina bifida clinic and just stumbled into it. And I will be forever grateful to those physicians who treated me as a colleague, even though I was honestly freshly out of college. And, you know, having the neurosurgeon and the urologist look to me and my opinion as how do we help these kids function to the best of their ability, because that's all of our goal together collectively, made such a difference to those parents and families. You know, when you work on a team, especially for patients with spina bifida, there are so many factors. Spina bifida affects the whole body, right? So we needed a neurosurgeon, an orthopedic surgeon, a urologist, a gastroenterologist, a physical medicine doctor, a complex care specialist, a nutritionist. The list honestly goes on. A neuropsychologist, hugely helpful in Boston. I'm so grateful for the time that I got to spend with neuropsychology there because they helped me understand the importance of the cognitive strategy training that needs to go on. And there's such great overlap with OT and neuropsychology. And I think we work really well together to make sure we're providing the best recommendations to patients in that space. So at Vanderbilt, I have been very lucky to work so closely with PM&R, physical medicine rehab, and urology. And they both really care not just about, you know, how we make bladders function and keep those bladders and kidneys healthy. Of course, that's the main priority, but also how do we help these kids grow into happy, healthy adults and make sure that they're as independent as they can be? And it can be really hard to see that for families when kiddos are young because they're trying to keep them healthy and keep them well, keep them growing. And I think I'm happy to work at a place where we consider that and we also are thinking about where they're going to be in 5 years and how can we help them get there. So I walked into Vanderbilt and the urology team sort of accepted me with open arms. And once they heard about what OTs could do, they jumped right on the bandwagon. I don't think they really had experience working with OTs before. And, you know, having someone who was comfortable working on self-cath, I think it sounds scarier than it is at times because any occupational therapist is well-trained to do this. You know, we train in activities of daily life. This is an activity of daily life. Parents do it, kids do it. This is absolutely within our wheelhouse. And I think it's important that we are on that team to help kids learn. One of the things that can be hard is in a urology practice, we have amazing nurses who help our families and teach our families how to self-cath, but there's no real standardized system, at least none that I've come across nationally as I've talked to other spina bifida clinics, to really help kids learn and instruct them or what age we start to teach kids how to learn. So what I was experiencing as I, you know, went through clinic in my early years at Vanderbilt was I would meet kids who were 13, 14 who had just never even attempted self-cath. And it was just a foreign concept to them. And they were frustrated and they were embarrassed and they didn't even know how to start. And families really didn't know how to start. So what we've looked at and what our urologists have really supported me to do is, can we start this process earlier? Why can't we try with a five-year-old to at least, you know, get them on the path, at least try it out, identify gaps? That's what OTs do. We look at what are your functional strengths and what are your functional deficits? Do we really need to wait until the kiddo is 13 to learn? If we, you know, why can't we try earlier? So they've been very gracious about that. And we've really built a practice together in terms of how do we make sure kids are getting the best care? And once their bladder's healthy and their kidneys are healthy, can we get them continent? Can we get them independent? Can they go to school and not have to spend 30 minutes at the nurse's office every time they need to go to the bathroom? So that, I think the partnership between urology and nursing and OT is just super important. We need all of those pieces. We need the nurses to instruct families and partner with them. We need the urologist to make sure that everything is working well. And we need OTs to optimize their function. And if they get stuck, you know, just because a kiddo is in a wheelchair doesn't mean that they can't learn self-cath or doesn't mean we have to delay them learning self-cath. We have many, many strategies that we can use, adaptations, transfer training to help them learn. Something that was noted by one of our urologists, John Thomas, was, you know, they do lots of Mitrofanov surgeries at Vanderbilt, where they create continent channels or stomas where kids can cath through not their urethra, but a separate port. And there isn't a lot of data that we know of that really speaks to, well, when do you pull the trigger on that surgery? It includes bladder augmentation. It's a really big procedure. There are a lot of risks that can occur after the augmentation. You have to be very diligent about your cathing. And it's a great surgery. I think it's been hugely helpful to quality of life for many patients. But if we haven't ever tried to cath via the native urethra and we're doing that procedure solely for, you know, independence and not because there's something unhealthy about the bladder that we need to change through an augmentation, why should we not try the regular, you know, good old fashioned catheter your urethra away first. And if through my OT evaluation, I identify, you know, this patient has scoliosis and growing rods, it's incredibly difficult and time consuming for them to access the urethra, see their urethra, get undressed. Well, maybe that's a good indication for them to have a Mitrofanov surgery. But let's give it a go first. Let's do some OT to work on that. And if it doesn't work out, then we know and we feel good about making a decision to embark on a huge surgical endeavor. So they have been really happy. The urologist at Vanderbilt have been really happy with having that option. They helped me edit and write a paper that was published on sort of the OT approach to, you know, considering sending children with neurogenic bladder for an OT consult before you decide to do a Mitrofanov surgery, just to get their feedback on how they're functioning. And is there anything else we can do to optimize their independence before we go down that path? And what we're doing right now is we just got approved for a grant through the American Occupational Therapy Foundation to basically do a pilot study on this and to look at how we can, are there standards of OT care that we can employ for any spina bifida clinic, for any multidisciplinary urology clinic across the country to say, hey, this is how OTs can be used in your practice. This is what OTs would do in this setting using co-op. We're going to also use telehealth as an option and sort of give patients the opportunity to be seen in the clinic, but also to have coaching in their home because that's where they're doing it all the time. And can we prove that OTs can be really beneficial in this area so that more urologists across the country can start to use OTs to help their practice as well?
That's fantastic. And I think you bring up a lot of really good points that I also see in research as well. We had one study that had pediatric in it, and because we predominantly do adults. And something that we continuously found was there wasn't very much education, right? So like, okay, when is cathing good? When, how do they go about cathing? You know, is there education and literature out there to kind of help train them? And that age, like when is the appropriate age to train and not? And when do you, you know, take on this huge surgery? I mean, I think it's amazing and such a good point that even though you're already seeing probably so many different doctors, you have a huge multidisciplinary team a lot of times after your child is diagnosed with spina bifida, but before you consider such a life-changing surgery, going for an OT consult, I think is super imperative. And it just helps them, okay, these are some strategies, try these out first before you make that decision, because you can't go back, right? So at the end of the day, you know, that is a huge surgery. They've had many surgeries probably already. Parents are very cautious about that. So why not get a little help with OT before you make that decision? This has been absolutely amazing. So any last remarks for our listeners?
So yeah, I think that, you know, working in a variety of multidisciplinary clinics, I would encourage any provider seeing pediatric patients with neurogenic bladder, if you haven't worked with an OT, if you've never sent for an OT consult, see if you can reach out and, you know, find an OT that is available in your area, because our job is to make our patients live well. You know, urologists and physicians do so much to make our patients live healthy, to persist on with life, but we want them to live the best that they can. And I think there's such value in using OTs for that. I just don't think a lot of urologists have even thought about using OTs before. We can look at all of their aspects of their daily functioning, their cognition, their motor skills, because that's what cathing is. You know, it's not just the ability to hold a catheter. It's the ability to sequence those activities. It's the ability to problem solve what's going on so that they are safe and they avoid UTIs. And we keep their bladders and kidneys healthy. So reach out to your local OT, because I think they can provide a lot that maybe it wasn't, some things that were not considered before. And I think for parents, I think it's never too early to start facilitating independence with self-care. I think that is so hard. It's easier said than done, because there's a lot of things that, you know, parents are doing, whether it's planning for school or, like you said, going to many medical appointments, seeing many medical doctors. But dressing and hand hygiene are really almost prerequisite skills that can be challenging for kids with disabilities to sort of navigate at times. But there's no too early age. I sometimes hear parents say like, oh, they're not developmentally ready. Or maybe even clinical staff say, oh, they're not developmentally ready. And I don't always love that answer because I think we should hold high expectations for kids. We should meet them where we're at. I'm not going to expect a kid to place a calf. That's the last thing I ever ask kids to do. There are so many steps and things we need to do before we even get there. And there's not a too early time to train on how to wash your hands, how to get dressed, and also for them to instruct caregivers on what to do. You know, if truly a kiddo was not going to be successful with placing a calf themselves, to me, it's still really important for them to be aware of the sequence of what to do and to be able to instruct caregivers for their body safety, for their autonomy, and for their confidence. They sometimes have to have school nurses calf themselves, maybe other caregivers. And our families are lucky, you know, to have these people who love them and care about them and the support systems that they really need. But we want kids to be the boss of their own body and to be safe. So even if physically there are some barriers, I think going through that sequence and kiddos knowing exactly the steps of what to do is just as important.
That's fantastic. Morgan, thank you so much for joining me today and sharing your expertise, insights on pediatric occupational therapy and its role in managing neurogenic bladder. It's been an absolute pleasure having you as a guest on Bladder Buzz. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bladder Buzz is presented by the Rehabilitation Research and Training Center on Neurogenic Lower Urinary Tract Dysfunction. The information presented in this podcast does not express the views of the individual's employer or affiliated institutions. The content is for informational and reference purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, or as the sole source of guidance for decision-making. We advise you to always consult with a physician before making any healthcare decisions or for guidance about a specific medical condition. Thanks for listening. Come back soon.